Jennifer, it's so nice to talk to you. Thanks for making the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I want to ask you about your reaction to some of the proposals that you're hearing in the governor's State of the State address. As you know, and many of our listeners know, he's not just delivering one this year, he's delivering a whole series. What are you hearing?
Yeah, we've had a lot of sneak previews, I think, over the past couple of weeks from his office at his various press conferences he's been holding now pretty much daily related to the ongoing pandemic. So he's kind of teased some of the things that are on the top of his list. I don't think anybody's surprised that the looming budget deficit is the number one topic of conversation. From our standpoint, some of the voting rules that he has been proposing, I think, are good, although the Senate has already moved some of them, better versions, arguably, than what the governor has proposed without having seen the actual legislation. But I don't think anyone's super surprised that tenant rights, helping small businesses, trying to find revenue sources, whether it's through mobile betting or recreational marijuana, are the big topics of conversation right now.
What are the league's priorities this year?
We're definitely going to be working on trying to clean up and enhance some of the voting laws that we passed in 2019. We got to finally see them in full effect in 2020 with the pandemic. So expanding early voting is at the top of the list. Cleaning up our absentee voting rules and processes is up there as well, since 2020 was kind of a test run of what it may be like in the future now that no excuse absentee voting is also going to potentially be on the horizon in the future. Besides voting, we're also looking at redistricting. Of course, this is our redistricting year, so that's going to be a big priority for us. And then we're always looking at open government rules, cleaning up certain rules related to court reform and all kinds of different issues. It never really know what exactly what direction a session is going to go.
Well, let's dig into some of these a little bit more deeply. On the voting rights front, can you describe how you think expanding early voting should be done in New York?
So there's a few proposals on the table. One that happened during session last year, which basically mandated, and this came out of Rensselaer County, that mandated that every county have a early voting poll site in the largest municipality. And that was a direct result of our first go at early voting, that Rensselaer County did not have an early voting site in their largest city. So that'll be coming into play this year, which is great. But we definitely want to see more access to early voting. We'd like to see all counties increase their amount of poll sites in general. And one of the proposals on the table is reducing the number of registered voters required per early voting poll site from 50,000 to 25,000, which for the most part would force, for lack of a better word, every county board of elections that currently has one site to add a site. There's a few counties that will still only be required to have one site, but the majority will have to have at least two. And the other part of that proposal also removes the cap of how many poll sites a county is mandated to have. So instead of saying a county can only have up to mandated 7 poll sites, although the new law that passed now says 10, there would be no cap. So it would be however many registered voters, 25,000 intervals, you would have to have that many sites.
So this is clearly going to have a budget implication. Do you envision that even though it's going to cost the state some money, that this is a viable proposal this year?
Yeah, and we have been fighting for funding for counties for these new election reforms since well before 2019. The State Board of Elections is always underfunded. Since I've been with the league, they get a cut every year, or have gotten a cut every year I've been with the league. And it's very frustrating because it just makes you feel like the state doesn't really value democracy, and they pass all these great laws that look great on paper in a press release, but when it comes to actually putting their money where their mouths are, they don't typically spend money on election reforms. The good news is we have heard from some counties that adding one additional site will not be that onerous of a burden, and they'll just basically split the resources that they're using now. So hopefully the larger counties will be able to cover the cost of having to increase their number of sites as well. But even more ideally, the state would provide some sort of source of fiscal income to be able to actually pay for these.
On redistricting, it's a very complicated issue. Can you break it down for our listeners what it means that this is a redistricting year?
We finished our census last year with a lot of frustration, I would say. It was very hard, I think, to truly get out the count during COVID, but the Census Bureau did the best that they could with the resources that they had, and now the states are all waiting for data from the Census Bureau to redraw their state lines, their congressional lines, and then in most cases also their local lines. And they're going to use the data from the census to redraw those lines to see how the population has shifted, to see where people are going, to make sure that these districts are most fairly representative of the people that actually live in them. And for New York State's purposes, we're doing it different this year. For the very first time, instead of our legislature drawing the lines that then become their own districts, we're having an independent redistricting commission draw these lines. This is our first time doing this. The commission has been formed. They've already started meeting. And at this point, I think they're just waiting for their funding allocation and for the census data to actually come out so that they can really get started.
I received a notice from the League of Women Voters from my local chapter. I'm a member, a proud member of the League of Women Voters. And I received a notice saying that there were upcoming demonstrations, in-person activities, maybe counter-protests associated with what's happening around the inauguration, around the challenges to the November elections. And the advice from my local league chapter was to not go because it's dangerous. What can you tell me about the league's direction to its members that folks maybe avoid those gatherings?
Yeah, and this was something that came down from our national organization, and we definitely take their advice to heart. It's been a very difficult time as a nonpartisan organization to not be leaning in one direction, even in spite of some of the things that have happened, and our nonpartisanship is really important to us. And with this particular situation, it's very crazy because when we first had our go at this, at the start of all of this, with the women's marches, and then later with different environmental marches, and all the marches that happen, our National League was always encouraging us to participate and be there on the ground, and even more recently with Black Lives Matter, and also to be registering people at these marches. We're not just there in solidarity and support, we're there to empower them, to help them get registered to vote. But in this situation, our national organization decided that it was a bigger priority to keep our members safe than to encourage them to participate in these counter protests.
So really, like, the danger of violence is impacting our ability to make our voices heard in some ways. That's, I mean, unprecedented is the most overused word in 2020 and moving into 2021, but it's pretty unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's definitely frustrating to have to be experiencing this, and especially living in the capital region. And we work a lot with our staff in DC to kind of keep us updated on this. And it is very disheartening to hear how defeated they sound when we talk to them either via Zoom or over the phone about this whole situation. It's not ideal, but I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel, or at least I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel. It can't get any worse, right?
I've been trying to avoid saying that, actually. But there are ways for people to make their voices heard virtually, right? Have you been finding ways to mobilize people in support of your agenda from a distance?
Yes, I definitely think that there is opportunity, certainly at the state level, to be still advocating. It's a lot harder with the Capitol closed, but legislators, I think for the most part, have tried to make accommodations to have these virtual discussions, whether it's through hearings or through lobby meetings held virtually, to let voters and the people of New York State have their voices heard. We had partnered with a number of great groups on putting forward recommendations for rules reforms for the Senate and Assembly to try and keep everything as open as possible, to have the most accessibility as possible. So if you didn't have a computer, you could call in to listen. making sure that there was accessibility for individuals with disabilities. And I don't think they totally heeded our advice, but I do think that in the future, we're going to see more and more remote meetings. And I think it'll only get better from here.
Jennifer, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.